Howdy, folks. Welcome to the In the Blues Tone Chat Episode 2 podcast. My name's Shane, and we're going to have a chat first off about GAS, or Gear Acquisition Syndrome. As you may or may not know, recently I did a documentary about the open mic night culture in Melbourne, Australia, and I'm also going to be doing a documentary pretty soon about GAS, with a couple of close friends, actually, because one of them in particular has just been on this buying spree like you wouldn't believe. He's bought a whole bunch of amps and guitars in the last 12 months, and it's seriously insane. Like, most of the guitars are so similar that I don't understand why you would just keep doing that. I used to do that. I bought a few guitars in the past that were pretty similar, but they always had, I guess, different pickup combinations and a different sound. The ones that he's been going for are very, very similar. I'm not even sure they would sound that different in a blind test or whether they could be picked as each individual guitar. So I guess the thing I'm trying to work out is GAS, gear acquisition syndrome, usually strikes most for me when I'm not playing live or keeping busy with music in some capacity. Sometimes it's easier being a lefty because the options for me in terms of guitars are a lot less in Australia. Although, you know, if I in the US, I can go to places like Jerry's Lefty Guitars and pick up one of any number of things. But for me, generally, where I live, left-handed guitars aren't as easy to find. And that saved me quite a few times because it's easy to fall into the trappings of wanting new gear all the time. I think in your mind, you tell yourself, A, you really want this thing because it might help you play better, or B, it might make you sound better than other people or already what you've got, or it might give you newer creative ideas. So these are just some things I'm thinking about what people might think when they go buy gear. Or, you know, C, it just looks extremely cool. It could just be something like that. But yeah, I'm guilty of owning a couple of Strats at a time, and I don't really see the point in that. I understand if you want a great guitar and you want a less expensive guitar that you could take traveling, or you know, you want to take to certain venues where they don't get damaged. But having, you know, five or six or seven guitars like Strats or Les Pauls that are essentially all the same, you start to have to wonder why you're doing that, unless you've got loads of disposable income, for example. Or it's a hobby, but it's an expensive hobby to have. You might as well be buying cars. As I was saying, GAS usually strikes when either you're not gigging a lot, for me personally, or if you're really dissatisfied with your sound. I've made the mistake over the years of I bought so many different amplifiers, and I stress different amplifiers. I've gone from everything from the less expensive brands all the way through to Turox and Fender amplifiers and PV and you name it. I've had at least one of everything except for Marshall amps or Mesa Boogie or Mesa Boogie. I haven't had either of those either. It's not really my kind of sound. But they sound good for certain players, and that's why finding your sound is so much fun. GAS for me now has changed. It's not what it was. I've spent the thousands of dollars on amps and gear in the past, only to go back to an amplifier I've already had. And it's a strange thing to have great tone, and then being a guitar player or an artist or whatever creative person, people get bored with certain things, and they think they can find something better in something else. Probably a good relationship metaphor as well. So anyway, you go buy a different amp, and you know, after the honeymoon period is over, you tend to be unfulfilled, and you already start thinking about something else, or you're totally blown away. If it is a good upgrade, then go ahead and do it. If you've already got a great tone and it sounds good to your ear, odds are it sounds great to everybody else's ear. Once you've been playing for a while, you tend to sort of understand tone. I've done a lot of audio engineering in the past too, and I found that that's really helped me understand how things sit in a live context as well as when you record. I've also come to realize that some of the more expensive amps on the market aren't necessarily better in a recording situation or in a live situation. They're maybe not as versatile as other amps. They might not have the particular sound you're looking for. For me, the best clean tone that I've had is my Blues Deluxe amp, and I like it more than my Turok. The Turok had a certain sort of thing about it that I really liked, but the Blues Deluxe, as a clean amp, for me, for my tone, for what I like, and for my pedals, it's leagues ahead of the Turok for my particular type of sound. The Supersonic had the best drive tone out of any amp I've ever had, but it didn't have the best clean tone out of any amp that I had. So it's a trade-off there as well. If you're buying an amp for a drive tone, I'd suggest the Supersonic. If you're buying an amp for a clean tone, find the clean tone that's right for you. I'm only talking about Fender amps in terms of drive tone. There's plenty of other great amps with great drive tones as well, drive channels. So take that into consideration. I guess the question is, what makes you so motivated to go buy something? And it happened to me not long ago. I was sitting around and I thought to myself, I could make some backing tracks. I play a little bit of bass, a little bit of drums. So I thought, you know what, if I just found some really cool drum tracks, I could lay down some bass. I don't have a bass anymore, so I decided to go and get one. I looked online 3 or 4 days straight trying to find one that I really liked, and then I found one. I had to have it straight away. It was one of those moments where the price was absolutely right. It was a good item, and it was nearby. So I thought, yeah, I have to get this. And that's really all I thought about. And that's one of those OCD things I think musicians can have, where as soon as they know that there's something either better or different or something that they really want out there, it consumes your kind of thought process. Everything kind of leads up to testing it out or buying it or getting it online or whatever the case may be. For me personally, it's not as bad as it used to be anymore, which thank God, because it got expensive. I'm also not in a position now that I was when I was working in my IT job where I could spend a certain amount of money a month or every few months on gear and it wouldn't, you know, it wouldn't hit me as hard. So right now for me, I'm really happy with my main guitars, my 52 Tele, my Strat, my Little Crow guitar, my 335, pretty much cover everything. And then I've got my Squire Classic Vibe and my Squire Classic Vibe Strat and Tele, sorry, so one of each. And that pretty much covers it all. For me to justify spending money on another Telecaster would mean that I would want to sell my 52 reissue Telecaster. And I almost came close to that point when I played the Sur Tele, and I'm really glad I walked away from that, because since I've had the fret job done on my 52 reissue, I put stainless steel frets on there, or had that done, it's now become the best left-handed Telecaster I've ever played. And I'm really glad I persisted with that. And it looks super cool, and I've worn it out in a way where I've worn it out. It's not reliced already or any of that kind of stuff. It's just, it's the guitar that will last me as long as I can play. And that's really cool. So for me, I don't really feel the urge to go buy another Telecaster. It's not going to improve my playing, or it's not going to basically make me sound any better. It's just going to be something different. And I think in the end, it's probably not going to make me as comfortable playing as what that guitar does for me. So that's just one of those guitars. And I'm yet to really find the Strat that gets me in that kind of way. I love my 50th anniversary Stratocaster. I think it feels great in the hand. It's as good a Strat as any out there. To me, Strats are pretty similar. You don't really, as a lefty, get too many variations on Strats. I did play one I really loved in Jacksonville, Florida, a few years ago at the Guitar Center. There was a secondhand or a used Fiesta Red reissue Tele. It was aged, it was reliced or whatever, and it looked and felt amazing to play. It was $2,000 secondhand, and that time when you're traveling, it's kind of hard to spend big bucks, you know, when you're on a vacation or whatever. So I did let that go, but you know, I was so tempted to buy it, and I remember, like, I got in this really big buying frenzy where I just wanted to get something while I was over there, and I ended up getting a G&L ASAT Telecaster, which was a good guitar. I liked lots of things about it, but for me it just didn't really feel like the main guitar that I love, which is my 52, and that stood the test of time. So unless I find something that totally blows me away by accident, I'm not actively looking for another Telecaster. And it's a really good place to be in terms of guitars. For amps, I always love trying new amps. I always like the possibility of finding something that meets my size and weight requirements, as well as tone requirements, or it might set me apart in some way to other guitar players. Everywhere you go, you find guitar players using 65 Deluxe Reverbs. Fantastic amp, can't say a bad thing about them. They're just phenomenal. I had one for a number of years, and I recently sold it to a really good friend of mine who, you know, that will really suit his style, and they're plenty loud and all that kind of stuff. But I also had a 68 Deluxe reissue reverb, which I've kept because basically it's different. That's the only reason. So I'm not going to go get another Deluxe reverb now. There's no reason for me to do that. Unless I find an amp that does something different to my Blues Deluxe and does something different to my 68 Deluxe or Mustang or whatever, then it's a possibility. But for right now, I'm not looking for amps. I've got a 6L6 tube amp and I've got a 6V6 tube amp, which sound completely different to each other, and they both respond great to my pedals that I use with them. So for me right now, I'm glad I don't really have the urge to go buy any more guitars. I'm pretty happy. I'd love to buy the Duesenberg guitar because it is different and it sounded amazing, and it's, you know, not too over the top expensive when you compare it to what else you could buy for that sort of price. I like guitars that are a little bit different now, and I'm leaning towards, you know, whatever I get in the future will be because it sounds different. I don't think I'm going to really find a guitar I like more than the 52, like I mentioned. So I doubt I will sell it. I really doubt I will sell it. I have thought about it before in the past, before I got the fret job done. But now there's no way. There's no way that's going to happen. So the best guitar player of all time debate has been going on and on. And I'm here to tell you who is the definitive best guitar player in the world, bar none. Actually, I'm not. I don't think there's ever an answer to that. I think it depends on not only people's opinions, but what kind of style of music you're talking about. You could maybe put a handful of particular players in the best blues players of all time category, but between those, it's personal choice. As with rock or metal guitarists, no matter what you listen to, you're going to have your own personal favorite, and you're going to justify why he or she is so much better than everybody else. It might be a tone thing, it might be a particular type of playing style or whatever, or the feel argument's always a good one as well. Someone, oh no, he's much better because, you know, he plays with more feel, and that is so subjective to the person listening as to why they feel that way about it, which is also an opinion as well. So I don't think any of these lists are relevant. I've heard some of the world's greatest guitar players, and I put that in quotations, in person, and then I've met or heard someone else who I totally feel just absolutely blows them away, both technically and feel-wise, as well as what it did for me listening. I would put Ray Beadle, a guy that I've heard many times live from Australia, up with any of the greats from how it made me feel when I listened to him play. He was on a whole other level. I'm not saying he's the best guitar player in the world, but this goes to justify that you can't really have these conversations and expect someone to always be at the top of these piles. It's just impossible to do. So my suggestion is enjoy who you enjoy listening to and don't really force your opinion on others, especially online, because you're not always right and you won't be right because there's just too much to equate into these conversations. So definitely just go with what you enjoy, listen to what you enjoy, and don't get into these arguments about who's the best and why, because those arguments just aren't good. So what is signal noise when it comes to amplifiers and guitar effects and cables and all that kind of stuff? Basically, you'll notice this on not always cheaper pedals, but on modulation and delay pedals. This is where you'll notice noise. Now, if you have your amplifier connected to your guitar, and you turn your guitar volume all the way down, whatever's coming out of the amp is basically like the baseline of noise that you're going to get. As soon as you put a delay or modulation effect in the mix and you turn it on and leave your guitar down, if you don't hear any difference between it being on and off in the signal, then you're in luck. If you hear a whole lot of white noise, like that kind of noise come through your amp, that's the sign of a noisy pedal. So I don't really know if everybody fully understands what noise in a pedal is, and when they say, or when I say, for example, on a demo, that this pedal doesn't add any extra hiss, crackle, or hum. I mean that in a good way, because it's just transparent in a way where if you turn on a delay pedal and you don't get that extra noise, in the white noise in the background, then that's the sign of a good pedal. It doesn't alter or change your basically baseline of noise from your amp. So definitely make sure when you test out these pedals, or any pedal, if you're at a shop, turn your guitar down, put it in the chain, turn it on, don't play, turn it off, don't play, and see if there's any extra noise. If you hear something that you don't like a background noise or a hum or a hiss, don't buy it. Go try another one. I've been lucky enough to try a particular range of pedals from a guitar manufacturer over the last 12 months or so, and this guy is famous for modding pedals, or, you know, electronics in general. Some of his pedals are the noisiest I've ever played, and it was really hard for me to kind of want to endorse them, I guess, or not endorse them, but to give him any sort of advertising. So a lot of these pedals that I demoed, I didn't end up posting the videos because I was really shocked at how bad they were. So definitely, always, regardless of the price, modulation pedals like tremolo will add sort of like a wave noise behind the background noise, so to speak, and that's normal. But if you hear any just noise as soon as you put a pedal on and it's not a distortion pedal, get rid of it. It shouldn't be doing that at all. So that's a bit of food for thought when it comes to signal noise and what it is and how to detect it, I guess, as well. So good pedals, regardless of price, should never make that noise. So Julio Skimmy from my Facebook page at facebook.com/intheblues has asked me what I think about modeling software versus analog amplifier simulation pedals. So let's get into this. I wanted to start by saying I've just had a chance to use the full version of BIAS from the guys that make the software. And while it's really in-depth and you can do so much with it and it sounds quite good, I found it a little overcomplicated. So for people who are new to home recording or they're just starting out with this kind of stuff, I'd honestly say that the amplifier simulation pedals by Tech 21 or Joyo are definitely the way to go. If you know what kind of sound you like, if you like a Fender tone, then you go get the Blonde pedal by Tech 21 or the American Sound pedal. Or you could go get the Mesa Boogie version or the Mesa Boogie version, depending on where you live. So, yeah, you can get a specific pedal for a specific sound. What the benefit of the software does is it does everything. But the trade-off for that is you have to be somewhat technically minded to set it up. I've been doing audio engineering for years, and I found it a little more complicated than I thought to set up. And I've also been in IT for years. I'm a server admin, I've done websites, I've done lots of stuff. So for a guy like myself who spent the last 7 years straight in IT, to find it complicated, yeah, it kind of put me off it a little bit. I got it to work, and it does sound really good. It sounds great in context to recordings. If you're just using it for recording at home, it's going to be fine. Just know that the technical side of it and how much you can tweak it may outweigh your productivity. I think sometimes the amp simulation pedals, I've got one on my desk right now, is just so easy to use, and you can use all of your existing pedals with it. Some of the modeling software, like BIAS, for example, doesn't have pedal effects. And if you wanted to use your pedals with it, good luck. You'd have to maybe do it after the fact or see how they sound as an extra VST plug-in on a particular section of the song. I don't know how that's going to sound. I haven't tested that yet. But if you already love your pedal board and you want to just record in a very simple way, for me, you can't go past those amplifier simulation pedals. I actually bought one by a company called Nux, and it's an digital amplifier simulation pedal. It does all the Fender amps and so forth, and that thing sounds amazing as well, and you can run your pedals into that. So there are other options than just Tech 21 or Joyo. And there'll be a video posted on my YouTube channel pretty soon with a demo about that pedal. So, great question. And thanks to Julio for submitting that on Facebook because, yeah, really cool topic. And it's, yeah, I hope that answers the question. I think it comes down to productivity versus tweakability versus technical knowledge versus non-technical knowledge. In terms of warmth of tone, both of them still sound good, but I'm still going to lean towards the amplifier simulation pedals. That's just my two cents. All right, on to blues purists. Blues purists are some of the most annoying people I know. I used to think I was a blues purist. I sat there and all I learnt was blues, no pedals, none of that kind of stuff. But what that did, it really limited me musically into only being able to play 12-bar blues or 8-bar blues. And if that's what you're into, that's fine. As you get older, you realize there's a lot more to music than just playing blues a particular way or playing it the old way. I think a lot of the problem musicians have today who are in that mentality, they don't take music anywhere new. They're stuck doing the same thing that people did 100 years ago, and they're doing it in their way, which is considered the right way. I'm not here to say that their way is wrong or right, but what I am here to say is at least write your own tunes, do something different with the music, playing one song or taking a rhythm from one song and writing new lyrics over it isn't creating anything new. It's just doing the same old thing with different words. So bring some originality to it and also bring a bit of personality to it as well. Play blues in a way that you want to play it. Don't feel like you're locked into any set formula. One of my most favorite guys that I listen to now almost daily is Chris Kane. That guy's approach to playing blues is so refreshing. He can do the Albert King thing. He can do the BB King thing. I think everybody dips into that bag. But he also sings with musicality. He said once he got out of the pentatonic, you know, his handcuffs were removed and he was free. And I think that's one of the biggest things that a lot of guys, including myself, didn't do early enough, is get out of the pentatonic and start playing more with some of the different sounds you can get. Like the major scale is just a simple thing to do if you already know the minor scale. There's lots of things to make music sound different and make blues sound different. Give it a funky groove, you know, get a drummer to actually play a groove rather than just shuffle all the time. Bring some originality to it. Take blues to the next level. Don't be a sheep and follow what everybody else was doing back in the day. I think music always needs to evolve. And while there's still a place for the old music, and I absolutely love like T-Bone Walker, I love that kind of stuff, the time to move on had already happened. You know, Stevie Ray kind of reinvented blues in some ways. Try to do something different for music, and you might find you have a niche that people really love. So combine it with great feel, blues, something different. Take it somewhere new. All ingredients for success, in my opinion. And for those sort of, you know, strict blues clubs out there in terms of, you know, organizations that might run certain blues events, I say this, think outside the box, help music grow, don't inhibit it by being so closed-minded. Thanks for listening. My name's Shane. If you're on YouTube, feel free to leave a comment or a question or a suggestion for me to follow up with another podcast installment. So this has been podcast number 2. If you're listening on iTunes, I thank you as well. And yeah, definitely check out all the links or head over to my website at intheblues.com.au. Thanks for listening. See ya.